You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, good evening, Ron. I want to talk a little bit tonight.
This sounds like Meet the Press.
It is. It's, you know, it's funny because you always say it to me, but it just doesn't come off as well as when I say it to you. I want to start with coronavirus because that is obviously the big news, continues to be, and talk a little bit about the good, the bad, and the ugly with coronavirus news. So I want to start with the good. And the good news is that in many places, the virus is flattening, the curve is flattening, and we're getting not so many people sick, not so many people dying, and more people being released from the hospital.
Yeah, that's really good news. You know, I think there's one or two places in the United States, correct me if I'm wrong, that have near to zero coronavirus cases. I think South Dakota, is either North Dakota or South Dakota, one of those two states has either very, very few cases. And as a matter of fact, that state hasn't closed anything down from what I heard just this evening on the news.
Yeah, even the restaurants and things are open there.
So do you think it's just because it's a very rural area and some places are very remote and there's just natural social distancing?
Or I think that that's absolutely true. And I think that that's true where we live as well.
Okay.
That we don't have as many cases in Texas and some of the other states that are more spread out. And the places you notice that it is a lot is the places that have a huge condensed population.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing, because there's been all sorts of, you know, articles, I mean, every single day there's news stories and it's, you know, all about statistics. And there's so many different ways that you can, you know, play with statistics. And, you know, I have to deal with them as a criminologist, but they need to be placed in context. And so there's been, you know, and I even wrote an article about it on America Out Loud in regards to how the media can play around with statistics. But I'm just finding it fascinating that there are some places like where we live, that we have, I think, in our entire county, and I think we have 44,000 people in our county, we have 11 cases, we have zero deaths. And you know, one of the things about the statistics, I don't want to go off in left field here, but I wanted to talk about the statistics because they can be a good thing for some areas and some states. Texas has got 29 million people. And we had how many cases did we have?
I wanted to say about 13,000. Is that
I think it's actually somewhere a little bit higher. I think it might be around 16,000 cases. But death wise, I don't think we've reached 300 deaths in the whole state of Texas. And maybe you can look that up and correct me. But when I see Texas in the maps that the media portrays, they portray it as a red state. And I don't mean red state political. I mean red state, like a danger state.
Right.
But that's not what it is at all, because you have to compare and contrast less than 300 deaths with somewhere around 16,000 cases and balance that against 29 million people.
Sure. Well, we've passed 300. We're at 318.
Okay, thank you.
But again, it's a huge state. And for people who've never been to Texas, I mean, driving across the state takes you more than a day. It's not like Rhode Island or something where you just go right across and you're in another state.
You know, I've been doing some work on social media and I've been posting some overlay pictures of Texas over Europe, and Texas encompasses many of the European countries,
really?
Right? And as a matter of fact, if Italy was, you know, and I did one today where I took Texas and I put Italy over Texas, and you know, Italy basically took up a few counties in Texas.
Yeah. Well, so, I think that what your point might be here is that that the way that they're spinning the statistics makes it sound like we have a lot of virus and death. However, if you really look at the population of the United States and the numbers of coronavirus cases and the numbers of deaths, it's smaller than almost anywhere else. Now, here's an interesting factoid that came out today that I thought was very interesting. And it's on the good news side in a way. And that is that in Sweden, they are not taking the social distancing measures and the masks and closing the businesses measures that we are in the United States. Yet their percentage of illness per population and their death rate per their percentage is about the same as ours. So it really begs the question whether or not we needed to take all these measures or not. And, you know, I don't know that we'll ever know the answer to that.
You know, I think the last thing that you said is probably the most accurate thing. I don't think we will ever know. And, you know, when this first came out, you know, I wrote another article, my first article on America Out Loud, dealing with this particular issue. And I was reminding people that H1N1, which is what we call the seasonal flu, mm-hmm. which used to be called the swine flu, at that particular time, and really almost until maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, was killing more people in the United States than coronavirus. And more people were dying every single day from H1N1, the seasonal flu, than were dying per day in the United States with coronavirus. Now the problem is that more people are contracting it. And so, you know, I absolutely want to underscore the fact that this is an extremely difficult and very, very deadly disease. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Mark Siegel, who I really like, who appears on one of the major cable networks, was talking about the fact that we don't know what the long-term effects of coronavirus is going to be cardiovascularly, up in the brain, in the internal organs, you know, things like that.
Well, that brings me to the bad news.
That's a good intro. Go ahead.
that was part of the bad news. And yes, we don't know. And this is interesting because our doctor, again, you know, I had knee surgery a little over a month ago. And in talking to my doctor, that was one of the first things that we discussed, was that we don't know the long-term effects of this and that he finds that very scary. He also was right on the money, which is going to come under the ugly news portion about another subject. Along the lines of bad news about the coronavirus is the shutdown is hurting America terribly. And also along the lines of bad news is the PPP money, that the stimulus money for small businesses has run out. If you have not applied, your application will now be rejected. And what Congress is trying to do right now, Ron, is they're holding up more money for the PPP in order to get even more money for disadvantaged businesses. And I have already told you how I feel about that. Under this particular problem, this pandemic, we are all equal. And stop trying to make us not be equal and some people be more equal. I have worked my entire life. You have worked your entire life. And I'm talking since I was 15 years old. And I have worked very hard to build a business that is ethical and profitable and supports people and helps other people live. And for them to say that somebody deserves a loan or more of a loan than I do, I just find despicable. And I would like them to come and say that to my face.
Oh, they won't say that to your face. I personally, when I first heard just last week when we were getting all this news that the Democrats were filibustering and holding all of this up because they wanted money for what they call disadvantaged businesses and other ridiculous things like the National Center for the Performing Arts and the Kennedy Center and all this
despicable,
specious stuff, which ended up being a kickback back to the Democratic Party,
yes,
by the way.
Yes.
Okay. I said that this is insane. This is, to me, I don't know if you'll join me in my opinion, but this to me is this whole redistribution of wealth. That's what it is. When we start talking about disadvantaged businesses, you know, define that. Okay, you have a thriving, successful business. You put a number of people to work. You support their families, you know, from their salaries from you, and you put out an amazing line of products. And, you know, so you have a successful business. And right now, we haven't heard anything yet for the PPP loan that you've put in for. But
no, and I put in for it on day one. My point is a lot of people haven't heard, and they won't hear now. But the problem I have, Ron, is with the Congress thinking that other people deserve to be in front of me. I don't deserve to be in front of them either.
Right. You just want a fair shot.
Yeah, it should be if you put your application in and you had all your ducks in a row and your proper paperwork there, then your application should go through. And if you are so-called disadvantaged because you're another color or because you live in a certain area, I just object to that because everybody has the same opportunities. When I started my business, I didn't start with a pile of cash. I started with nothing. And I risked everything to have that business. And, you know, I mean, I can tell you lots of stories, and you know them, about times when I had to go completely without because I had less than no money coming in. So it takes time, but to give other people preference.
Look, can I ask you a question? Yeah. Maybe you don't know the answer to it. I certainly don't, or I wouldn't ask the question. What constitutes a disadvantaged business? Is it a business that is in an economically disadvantaged area, or how do they define what a disadvantaged business is?
I truly don't know how they're defining it, other than I believe that they're defining it in some way having to do with race and in some ways having to do with economic areas. But, you know, it's something that I will look up. Regardless, every small business in America got hurt by this virus. Unless you happen to own a grocery store, then you're probably doing fairly well right now because grocery stores are up about 26%. But I just think it's really unfair. And I think that, I mean, I would love people like me, I would love 1,000 people like me and like you to go speak in front of Congress and say, what are you thinking here? You know, I mean, we all contribute to society, and nobody should have more or less than any other person. So that's my bad with the coronavirus. The virus is bad enough in and of itself, and bad enough in so many ways as far as, you know, people's lifestyles have changed. But go ahead.
So we've talked a little bit about the good. We're finishing up on the bad. What's the ugly to you?
The ugly to me is what you and I have spoken about, and you and I have felt and thought from day one, is that now people are actually waking up to the fact that this did not happen in a wet market, that it happened in a laboratory, and whether it was on purpose or by accident. And right now they're saying it was an accident. Don't know how they know that, but let's take that for what it is. It was still hidden by China, and all of the records were destroyed of the initial blood samples.
And they're continuing to destroy records,
according
to the scientists and epidemiologists that know what is going on.
And I do believe that doctor, which really haunts me, that blew the whistle, who then got the virus and died, I just don't think that was by accident. And I think that the games that have been being played with this have cost millions of people to get this virus and hundreds of thousands to die. And I think that is directly the fault of China. And I think that's the ugly. The second ugly, again, something that you and I often talk about, is the politicization of this virus. And again, Democrats trying to make it President Trump's fault. It is President Trump's fault that we have this virus. Don't blame China. Just the ugliness that never stops with them, with our president, it's just beyond the pale.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of hoping that with this challenge and all the goodwill from people in the United States and, you know, all the heroes out there, the first responders, the medical staffs, the doctors, the nurses, you know, the people that work in the stores every day, the people that drive the transit buses, the people that are in the packing plants and the food supply chain and the truckers and everything. I was hoping we would kind of come together cohesively looking at coronavirus as an enemy, you know, like, and I keep using in our conversations the analogy that I'm familiar with in World War II, where we had enemies on both sides of the United States. We had the Axis powers to the east, and to the west we had the Japanese Imperial Empire, and we were fighting horrific enemies and taking terrible losses, and everybody chipped in. And they all worked together, and companies retooled, and the, you know, American industrial military complex came about, and people had victory gardens, and there was universal sacrifice, and there was criticism, but there wasn't the level of criticism that President Trump and his administration are experiencing. And I find that not only inappropriate, but I find it specious. I find it totally political and uncaring of Americans who are suffering every day. And you know what? And you're a business person. I'm a business person because our businesses are different. You're suffering far more than I, but we are both put in for loans, and we're hoping that we will, you know, get a loan to keep our staffs working. But and even down to the common man. So when I, you know, write on social media, I post a column from America Out Loud, although the vast majority of the response is a very positive and uplifting response and a thank you for bringing us this information, I get the naysayers and I get the people that are ridiculously critical, and their criticisms are specious, and often they're just completely inaccurate. And I say, you know, and I'm not doing the why are you picking on me thing. Hey, I'm a big boy. I've been doing this for many years. I'm used to criticism. Every time I step into a court of law, somebody's trying to impeach me. but I say to myself, I use you. I stole your saying. To what end? Right. Okay, to what end? So what are you trying to say? They never go out and say it. They're critical, but my thing is, okay, that's fine. What do you bring to the table? Tell me what you're bringing to the table that adds to the conversation, that helps us all survive this or understand something more, you know, a little bit more information. Please don't be, you know, social media lemmings that jump off a cliff or follow the guy with the flute, you know, off without even asking any questions, without vetting any information. I find that in today's society, where education and information is readily available to anybody that has a computer, you know, or can open a good book, and they're not doing that. I find that disheartening, and I find that as part of the ugly part.
Yeah, and there definitely are all three parts to this situation, and I'm going to make you a white chocolate mocha latte.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Thanks so much for the coffee. It's beautiful.
It is.
It is. It's beautiful.
It's our Christmas present latte machine. Anyway, I want to talk about one more thing that I think is, I don't know if you want to say we did the good, bad, and the ugly. Now let's do the kind of ridiculous. Governor Newsom in California is giving $125 million of California taxpayers' hard-earned money to illegal aliens in this pandemic time. And it's my opinion that, of course, they're human beings. They don't belong here, though. They're here illegally. And I think that taxpayers should have a right to say something about where their money goes. And I don't think that in a time like this that that might be where they want to use it, but maybe they would. I would rather see people who are interested donate as they used to churches and places that can distribute money or food or needs to people, legal or illegal, that need it.
Now, you know, I get that. I think some people would say that's heartless. Illegal aliens and immigrants that come here illegally, okay, do a lot of work that Americans are unwilling to do. You know, I say, yeah, factually, that's absolutely correct. But factually as well, they come here voluntarily. Nobody's forcing them to come to the United States. And you and I haven't traveled to several of these countries where these immigrants come from. We understand that the locations that they come from, more often than not, are economically challenging, areas of poverty, areas of strife, you know, and things like that. And they've chosen to come to the United States. But just like you, I believe that there is a process for coming to the United States and doing it the right way. And your parents did it, and my parents did it, and most Americans' parents did it. And so I'm sorry, but one of the benefits you get by being an American and doing it the right way, meaning getting your citizenship, is that when things like this happen, then the government is there and it should be there for you and not for other people that jumped over the line, which is that's what they do when they come in here illegally. They jump over the line and they come in here. And it's nice that they do jobs that Americans won't do. But then again, they've jumped over the line,
and they have
disadvantaged other people.
Yes.
And we do continue to reward them And I believe firmly that that needs to stop as well.
Well, I do too. And I just think it's really unfair to the people of California. That being said, a lot of people in California use the services of these people, and I understand that. I just want them to come here legally. We do have a process, and they should use it, and then there would be no issue at all. Right. And they would get the same money that everybody else gets.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't complain. If you're jumping to the head of the line over people that have been waiting in line for years, and then you have the gall to complain about that, I'm sorry. I don't feel a bit sorry for you. I feel sorry for the people that have applied the right way and have been patiently standing in line and doing everything that they need to do to become American citizens. Those are the people I feel sorry for, because when you jump over the line and then you get rewarded for that when the other people are not getting rewarded, you've disadvantaged those people.
Yeah, and it's interesting that people like us, and my business is in California, we don't get a stimulus of any kind, that the check that was sent out.
Correct.
And so forth. And I'm good with that. I'm absolutely good with that. I want that money to go to people who need it more than we do, but I want it to stay legal.
Right. It should stay with American citizens. And, you know, you've been mentioning California because they're doing that. They need to be California citizens, not here illegally. And I don't care, again, what type of work they've done. All right. You came here illegally. You disadvantaged other people, many people of your own race and culture and country. And I'm sorry. I just don't think that that's forgivable.
Well, a couple other quick things on this pandemic. I have noticed in the last couple of days, so that being, you know, this week, a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I'm noticing that a lot of the PPE items, the masks and the hand sanitizers and things, are loosening up in the marketplace, getting a little easier to get, which is a great thing. The bad news is that there are lots and lots of people from China that are sending over inferior product that is absolutely worthless and charging a lot of money for it. So people like me who are in this type of business have to be very, very careful about looking that they have the proper certifications, the proper FDA, and the different certifications that tell us that this product has been tested and accepted. And I'm hearing a lot of horror stories out in the marketplace about people buying things and paying good money for it. And by the way, you have to prepay all the time. Nobody does credit on PPEs. So.
Right. Well, the reason that they're not doing, I would think, I mean, this is your wheelhouse, but I would think because, number one, they don't know whether your business is going to survive and whether you'll have any money at all to pay them. So, you know, it's not like you're going to be able, you know, they're going to be able to bill you. The other thing is, I think they're looking for a fast buck. But one thing that you brought up that I think is very important is to know where these manufacturers are, and really whether they meet the health standards of the Food and Drug Administration. Because have you seen some of the videos that are out there and the just squalid, filthy conditions people are building these masks, you know, manufacturing these masks? I mean, I wouldn't stick that on my face.
Yeah, you know? It's hard to know. So you have to be very, very careful.
Exactly.
And you know, it's interesting because when governors or mayors of cities make these rules and say, okay, starting, you know, next Tuesday, you have to all wear masks, it's not that easy to get them. So, you know, it's for some people, that's hard. I sell them and I have a hard time getting them. I can imagine the regular person walking down the street would have a much harder time than I do.
And you're having problems with the hand sanitizer and also the gloves. I mean, all the PPE equipment,
all
right,
PPE,
Linda?
Yeah, it takes time to get. But every day, I filter through probably 1,000 different offerings in my marketplace, and I look to see who's got what at what price, who's got the certifications, and when can I get it. And today, you know, I came up with some jewels that just saved some people. And I feel really happy about that I was able to get them product in 2 days. So, I mean, that's amazing. It made my day.
Well, and you know, when I see you, and I mentioned this in one of our previous conversations, You know, we have offices in the same building in different sides of the building, but every time I come over, when I'm taking a break, I come over to see what you're doing because we're the only two people.
I'm never taking a break.
We're the only two people in the building. You're never taking a break. And I mean, you're putting in 14, 16 hour days, you know, 5-6 days a week to do what you're doing. And, you know, I just feel bad for you because my business is not tooled like that. I do, you know, different work.
Right, right.
You know.
Well, it's just, you know, we all do what we have to do. And it's times like these that I thank God for my parents who gave me a very good work ethic, because there's certainly things that I don't want to be doing. I'm having to do all my employees' jobs and I don't like all their jobs. So they like them, but they're, you know, we all have different talents and we all have different things that we're good at and not so good at. And I'm having to do things that I'm forcing myself to have to pay attention to and be good at.
Okay. So that's a good segue into a question that I have for you. It's a personal question. And it's an introspective question. And that is, what have you learned about Linda Martinelli through this? And what do you continue to learn about yourself during these challenging times?
Well, I don't know that I've learned anything new other than that I'm definitely not as young as I used to be.
How about a validation? Is there anything validated about your character traits or, you know, the way that you operate?
You know, I've always operated the same way and this is no different. So that method of operating has served me well my whole life and is serving me well in this crisis. What I do learn is that it's a little bit harder. When I first started the business, some 22 years ago, it was really just me starting, you know, and then I brought on a person, and then another person, then another person. I mean, that's how it works. And I did everything myself, but the business was much smaller. And to do everything myself now is extremely tiring. That I will say. But everything about the way that I work is the same as it's always been, and it's always done me well. So, Dr. Martinelli, how about you? What have you learned through this experience in your introspection?
Well, it's been a validation of sorts. You know, just like you, I was blessed to have parents with a phenomenal work ethic that, you know, instilled upon me the value of hard work, honest work, ethical work. And you know, I share, you know, your personal value about don't let obstructions get you down. Don't, you know, you get kicked, you get right back up and you go. You meet an obstruction by going through it, around it, underneath it, or over it. And so, you know, that's what I'm doing. Our businesses are a little different. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, the way that you look at it is my business, being a forensic criminologist and a death investigator, is that my business deals with stupidity and death. Okay, stupidity and death, intentional and accidental. And when we have challenging times like this, there is no lack of stupidity and there is no lack of death and there is no lack of violence. So whereas I'm seeing fewer calls during the week, we usually field, you know, maybe 60, 70 calls a week. Those calls are down to maybe about 10. But every call that comes in is an important call. Now, the next thing is I'm learning the value of retooling of sorts, because, you know, part of our business is law enforcement and government training and consulting. And those days, because of coronavirus, of putting on conferences and doing those types of things, I think those days are gone or greatly diminished. I think the coronavirus is going to come back every single year, a different strain, more difficult strains. And I think we will always be about a year behind it in getting a vaccine. That being said, you know, we have our company online, ETC Forensic Education, Training, and Certification. And right now, I am writing like crazy, and I am doing a lot of recruiting of forensic and law enforcement experts around the United States that are having difficulties running their business. And I'm saying, come to me. come to ETC Forensic and work there. So that's what I'm learning. I'm learning a little bit to be more like Linda Martinelli.
Well, ETC is a company, I think, close to both of our hearts, because this came about a few years ago where we decided that we would form a company to train law enforcement officers and forensic experts online in the things that they could be trained so that they didn't have to go out of the field, so that departments who have very difficult times getting budgets to work with, and therefore the officers don't get trained as they should, and therefore the cases come to you that should never be before a court.
Right.
So we felt that if we could make an effort and a dent and do something good for law enforcement, to have really, really good training and have it online that they could do in their car, from their desk, at home, wherever.
On any smart device.
Right. Yeah. That it would just be a big boon to their safety and the safety of the public.
But boy, I'll tell you what, as you know, it takes a lot of work. Because I'm also have my cases, right? I've had over 60 homicides I'm working. And so I have to do my cases, but they've moved, there is no travel anymore right now. So I'm not traveling anywhere. And my trials have been put out into the fall. I'm going to have a terrible fall. But what it does, and the silver lining of that, Linda, is that it gives me and staff more time to work on ETC Forensic.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be the wave of the future. And it's been a very difficult venture for us, and really, truly a labor of love, and a lot of time and a lot of effort, because I don't think that we realized how difficult it was to make really, really good curriculum.
Right. It's funny, we were talking about the three levels of knowledge, and the last level of knowledge is, which is the worst one, you don't even know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's us. We didn't even know when we started this, we didn't even know what we didn't know.
No, but we know now, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
And I love that, because I always like going head on into a problem, and if I don't know it, I want to learn it, and that's what we've done. So we'll be talking a lot about that. But in the meantime, I think I want another latte.
Well, boy, I'll tell you what, if it was good as the first one you made, I'm all for it. And here's my cup.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, I have a question for you. What do you think is going to be happening after this virus is the worst has passed? People get back to work, people start getting back to their lives. What do you think is going to change in America? And even in the world.
Wow. Do we have enough time to talk about that? First of all, I think everything's going to change. Everything. Everything. The way business is conducted, the way society comports itself by and large. I think the way that restaurants are run, I think the way law enforcement and the criminal justice system is run, I think the contacts between people themselves will probably get over this a little bit. Probably won't see as much handshaking as we used to, probably more knuckle bumps.
I've been seeing a lot of elbow bumps.
Yeah, and I think, and foot bumps. And, but I think, and the way that schools are run, I see, you know, we were just talking about, you know, an online company. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to start seeing education becoming more online and less congested schools, whether it's kindergartens, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, colleges, universities. I think you're gonna see a increased emergence of internet technology, online education, and not only just in schools, but I think professionally, you may see, and this is a big part of your business, Linda, you may see a significant diminishing of conferences and conventions. You know, you may see places like Las Vegas be slightly diminished, you know, if not more than that. I think places like Vegas are going to rebound because people are naturally risk takers.
Yeah.
But I think we're gonna look at things a lot differently. It'd be interesting to see if government changes as a result of this. I don't think it will. I think we're going to have, unfortunately, the same political fights. I think it's going to get worse. I think this election is going to be horrible coming up.
I agree with you on all of those points. And I think that, you know, one of the things that you just mentioned about government, where you have people like Gavin Newsom trying to move California to more of a socialistic type state, I think that they're going to use this to that advantage as best they can. And I think that there's still going to be games played because of this pandemic. But some of the things that I find interesting are a lot of parents right now have had a lot of time at home that they don't usually have, maybe have never had. I know for me, this has been the longest time I can ever remember being at home. So
with me,
with you. Yeah. So I think that in families, I'm hoping that they took some time to, you know, re-meet their kids and re-meet their spouse and reintroduce themselves and find out things that are interesting to them and find out, you know, maybe they've been outside playing ball or maybe they've been taking walks, those types of things. And I'm hoping that it opens a door for them that they might like, because we have made ourselves so busy as a society, we've really forgotten about the individual a lot of times.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's not just the society, but just look at the Donna, at the Dr. Ron and Linda team. You and I are used to running around with our hair on fire. We're used to traveling all over the country on business, you know, things like that. And we have been able, and I look at this as a silver lining, honest to God. I actually am enjoying having a little bit more time with you. Not that I haven't always done that, but I mean, now we're really, we're able to sit home on the weekends. We're working a lot less on the weekends.
Yes.
And we're getting to enjoy the property. We're getting to enjoy our neighborhood. I really enjoy the drive to work, even though it's always been a beautiful drive to work because we live out in the country. But now there's like, I mean, if we pass three or four cars in 13 miles, you know, that's a lot of cars. And, you know, how many times have we just looked out the window and just, you know, said, oh my God, you know, we're so blessed to live in a beautiful area. And so, I mean, that to me, I like the decompression time. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. And I think that's what I wonder about for America. For example, with us, you know, we've been cooking a lot more at home where we really ate out for years.
And experimenting.
A lot. And we've been really enjoying the cooking at home to the point that I have no desire to go out and eat. I mean, just none, which is really unusual because I love to go out to eat. But now I'm really loving staying home and eating. And I'm finding that what we're cooking, besides being more healthy, is just more fun and more tasty. And, you know, I don't feel rushed. I can, you know, eat as I choose. So I'm really enjoying that. And I think that people in America, whatever their experiences are, unless they've been horrible during this event, that have been stuck at home involuntarily, yet could have that silver lining and find things that, hey, maybe, you know, having your kid in 100 different things after school is not the best thing. Maybe having them come home and spend some time with family is the best thing. I'm hoping that that's what we get out of this.
Yeah, and
I agree with you with all the business things. I think things will definitely change. There's going to be a lot more Zoom meetings and a lot more Skype meetings and those types of things. I think over time, if this diminishes, people will forget, as they do, and they'll go back to the other ways of having a lot of social contact. But the people in this particular moment in time are never going to forget this.
Yeah, you know, and Linda, I hope, you know, that this is going to be a learning experience for people, you know, in the United States to be prepared. We absolutely need to wean ourselves off of China, and we need to retool America. We need to retool America in many different areas, in our manufacturing, in our pharmaceuticals, in our packaging. And I mean, we just cannot be so reliant on the People's Republic of China, because they do not see things in anyone's best interest except their own. And I mean, I believe that there is more than enough blame to go around with regards to China and hiding this stuff from us and not being transparent and not telling the world, hey, we got a bug loose. And instead, what they did is they gave themselves at least 6 or 7 days, and they sucked up all the PPEs, and they closed down certain borders, and they were all about protecting each other, but they, and letting people from Wuhan fly all over the country, I mean, fly all over the world, for God's sakes. And I don't think that that should be forgotten nor forgiven. And I'm talking about the Chinese people. I'm talking about the Chinese government.
Sure.
But we need to be far more reliant on ourselves, or in other words, self-reliant. We need to be more independent. I believe the President of the United States made a huge positive contribution when he made us an energy independent country against all the environmentalists and all the naysayers and all the globalists. And now we need to extend and do what we did with energy to manufacturing, to cars. We should be doing our own cell phones, our own computers, our own vehicles. We should not have to get parts and technology from China. We can get it from other allies, because we're definitely going to need that. We just can't turn the light switch on overnight and manufacture all of these things. But we need to be looking at other sources while at the same time building up our own self-reliance.
Well, I totally agree. And I hope that we as a country will learn that lesson, because this has been a very painful and a very deadly lesson for all of us. And maybe the world needed this in some way to wake us up, because, you know, President Trump's been saying this since before he was elected, that China is taking advantage of everybody, and they are, and they have been. And this example of how they didn't care about the rest of the world, and they, you know, they kind of threw everybody else to the wolves and took care of their own. Right. That's not to be forgotten. But one of the things that Trump has always talked about is bringing manufacturing home, and that's what we need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to mention something. Of course, this is just a Dr. Ron opinion, but I want to mention something with regards to the President of the United States, and it sort of ticks me off sometimes when he speaks in glowing terms of China and China's, president and everything. And, they're great buddies, so to speak. President Trump is not a stupid man. He didn't become an international financier
right.
and entrepreneur by being stupid. He knows exactly what time it is with China and with the president and with the Chinese Communist administration. But he wants to go along to get along because at the end of the line he sees something that will move the United States of America, further down the road in a positive way. I think he's a very astute businessman. I think that if President Trump is reelected, and I feel fairly confident that he will be reelected, he'll be a lame duck president and he can do whatever the heck he wants with regards to China. And I think that you will see an increased, what's the word I'm looking at? Fervor on the part of the president to get America to be more self-reliant. I think we're going to see that from this president of the United States, and I hope people pay attention to it.
Well, and the Democrats will go into that kicking and screaming all the way, which makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Right.
Everything that they're doing is really not for America. It's against America. And
I don't know. You know what? Can you help me with this other than the simple reasoning being it's about power and they want power and they want people to resonate with them. And, there's so many Trump haters out there, which is unfortunate, but, do you get that? And the media is the same way. Why put the United States of America down? Why always have such negativity? I get the fact that they hate the president of the United States and they want to put him down, but why put the United States of America down and all of its people with everything that this president and his administration have accomplished during the last 3 years?
They don't acknowledge of that, Ron.
Did they not look at the economy? Did they not see that the jobs were up? And had it not been for this pandemic, my God, we'd be, we'd be doing so well today. And I think we will bounce back. It'll be a little bit slow, but I think America will bounce back.
Oh, they absolutely will bounce back. Everybody's ready to go back.
Absolutely. I have full confidence in America's ability and the American mindset to move this country forward. You know, the one thing that I like from everybody that we've been talking with, you said it, Linda, everybody is chomping on the bit to get back to work.
Yes.
I'm not hearing people saying, wow, this is really cool. I could do this for the rest of my life.
No.
Everybody's saying, damn, I want to get back to work.
Yeah.
I want to get out there. I want to make a difference. I want to get back to my job.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you and I are doing a little bit behind the scenes right now is we're talking with people. We're very fortunate to know people from all over. And we have lots of friends that are all over the country and indeed in other countries. So starting next week, we are going to be talking with these people. And we're going to be talking with three different people on a Talking While Married show. And those three people will be from somewhere different. So our first show is going to feature somebody from Mexico and somebody from Italy and somebody from England. And they're going to talk about what's happening in their life and their country with this pandemic. And they're also going to talk about what, if any, silver linings they may have found from, all the changes that have taken place in their lives. So that's just kind of a little teaser with people that we are talking to, and there's going to be quite a number of them. And I think it's really interesting to hear the different perspectives. And I'll give a little hint that I haven't even told you. One of the people that we're talking with thinks that this whole thing is a bunch of malarkey and it's just the flu and get over it and move on and stop having all of these layoffs and so forth. So, and that person happens to be in the medical field. So
wow.
That's going to be really interesting.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you how excited I am about being part of this. This has been a Linda Martinelli production.
Yes.
And I know, you know, obviously some of the people that we're going to be talking with, especially internationally. And I'm just really excited to learn, especially the people from different countries. I want to learn what is similar and what is dissimilar about,
right,
about how the coronavirus has impacted them and impacted their country.
And it's all about people's personal experiences and their perspectives. And whether they're even in the same state or they're across the world, people have different experiences with what has happened to them. Right. And I'm anxious to hear them.
And so it's going to be 5 shows, right, with 3 people on. Each show, each time we do a Talking While Married show, right? And
yes.
Are we starting internationally? Is that how we're going to
start? We're starting internationally.
Fantastic. Well, you know what? I just want to reiterate something that we've said in the last few shows since we've had the challenge with the coronavirus. You know, my heart and my prayers go out to all the first responders, all the medical people, all of our military, the checkout clerks, the fast food people, the truckers, the people working in the packing plants, everybody that is chipped in. You are all our heroes.
Yes. God bless all of you. And
God bless America.
Yes.